Chapter 3. Christianity comes to Britain. Augustine comes to England. In the last days of the Roman Empire, one religion, Christianity, spread all through the countries controlled by Rome. The Roman emperor himself became a Christian. He told his subjects that they should be Christians. Christianity was popular. Then the Roman Empire was destroyed. The time after the fall of the Roman Empire was known as the Middle Ages. During the Middle Ages, even though the Roman Empire was gone, Christianity survived. Many people were still Christians in all the different lands that had once been ruled by Rome. And many of these Christians in the old Roman Empire followed a man called the Pope. The Pope was the leader of the Christian church in the city of Rome. Many people believed that God had given him the job of taking care of Christians all over the world. One day, the Pope was walking through the marketplace near his home when he saw slaves for sale. Men and women were being sold for large amounts of money so that they could work for their masters for the rest of their lives. The Pope shook his head over this evil. He walked over to look more closely at the slaves. Three of the slaves, just boys, not much older than you, had very blonde hair, and their skins were white as paper. The Pope was used to seeing only dark-haired people around him. In those days, fair hair was unusual and strange. "Where did those boys come from?" he asked one of the slave traders. "From the islands of Britain," the slave trader answered. "We sailed over there and kidnapped them. All the British look like that." Now the Pope had never heard of the island of Britain. "Are the people of Britain Christians?" he asked. "Oh, no," the slave trader said. "They've never even heard of Christianity." The Pope bent down to talk to the blonde boys. "What are your people called?" he asked. "We are called Angles," the oldest boy said, "and we want to go home." "Angles? You look more like angels," the Pope exclaimed. And he bought the boys so that they would not have to be slaves. He took them back to his home, fed them, sent them to school, and taught them about Christianity. Then he sent for another Christian named Augustine and told him about Britain and about the handsome Angles who lived there. "Augustine," he said, "I want you to go to Britain. Take these boys back to their homes so that they can tell their families about Christianity. And I want you to stay in Britain and teach these people more about our faith. Build churches in Britain. I will make you the Archbishop of England, and you can take care of all the Christians in the country." Augustine agreed to go to Britain. He took 40 men with him, and they set off on their journey to the island. When they reached England, they were greeted by the most powerful king in Britain, Ethelbert, who ruled the whole southern part of the country. Ethelbert had heard that strangers were coming to do magic in his kingdom. He met Augustine and his companions on the shore. "What strange powers do you have?" Ethelbert demanded. "I won't let you into my palace until I can be sure that you won't try to lay a spell on me." "We aren't here to lay spells on you," Augustine said. "We are here to tell you about Christianity." And then he and his companions told Ethelbert all about the Christian faith. Ethelbert said. "This sounds interesting, but it's all very new to me, and I don't want to give up my old ways. But you've come a long way, and you seem to be quite polite and harmless. So I'll give you permission to tell the people of my kingdom all about your God. You can live in Canterbury, and no one will bother you as long as you behave yourselves." So Augustine and his companions settled down in the town of Canterbury. They built a church and preached to the Anglo-Saxons. Eventually, many of the Anglo-Saxons became Christians. They learned how to read and how to write. They built churches and monasteries where men could live and worship God. And Augustine himself became the first Archbishop of Canterbury, the leader of all the Christians who lived in England. Medieval monasteries. Augustine and the men who went with him to Britain were monks, men who had promised to spend the rest of their lives praying, working, and studying the Bible, rather than marrying and having children. Monks lived together in special buildings called monasteries. They went to church 8 times a day to pray and worship God. During the day, they worked in the monastery garden, helped with the cooking, cleaning, and laundry, and did other jobs that the abbot, the chief monk, gave them to do. There were monasteries all through the old lands of the Roman Empire, in Italy, Spain, Africa, and all the other countries that had once belonged to Rome. When the Anglo-Saxons learned about Christianity, some of them wanted to be monks too. So they built monasteries in England and in Ireland where they could live just like other monks did. Brother Andrew is a monk in an Irish monastery. His job is to build furniture in the monastery workshop. The monks make all their own chairs, tables, and beds. This morning, Brother Andrew is working on building a new table for the refectory, the large room where the monks eat together. He is rubbing oil into the table's top to finish it, but he keeps stopping to blow on his fingers. He's cold. The workshop is in a stone shed, and there's a fireplace in one wall, but the December wind is blowing around the windows and in under the door, and it's still very dark outside because the sun hasn't risen yet. He is working by candlelight, and his eyes hurt. Brother Andrew hopes that the bell will ring soon to summon him to the refectory. He got up at 2 o'clock this morning for the early morning service and then went on to his workshop to get started on the day's tasks. It must be nearly 5 o'clock by now, he thinks, almost breakfast time. Finally, the bell rings. Brother Andrew puts on a heavy cloak and hood and walks toward the refectory. On his way, he passes a line of sick and hungry people who have already formed outside the monastery gates. Brother James knows a lot about herbs and about healing sickness. He is the only doctor within 3 days' journey, and villagers from several small villages nearby come up to the monastery whenever they get sick. The monks cook food for the hungry too, and serve it even before they eat themselves. The sun is just beginning to come up when Brother Andrew steps into the refectory. He can smell the fresh wheat bread that's been baked for breakfast. The monks aren't allowed to eat butter on their bread, unless it's Christmas or another special day. And the rules of the monastery say that no one can eat the meat of a four-legged animal. So sausage, bacon, and beef are never on the breakfast table. But he likes the thick, crusty brown bread. And this morning there are cooked beans and peas and a few sweet withered apples, the last of the fall harvest, kept in a cool dirt cellar until now. Monks aren't allowed to talk at meals. Instead, Brother John reads to them from the Bible while they eat in silence. But Brother Andrew whispers to the monk next to him,
"How did your pupils behave yesterday?"
"Terrible," the monk whispers back. He teaches in the monastery school where village children are sent to be educated.
"They don't want to learn how to write. Every time I turn my back, they whisper and giggle to each other. They don't pay any attention to me at all. And they drew a rude picture of me on the slate when I had to go out for a few minutes."
Brother John hears the whispering and glares over at them. Brother Andrew finishes his breakfast and waits until the abbot, the monk who runs the whole monastery, prays. He goes back to his workshop to finish his table. It is a beautiful piece of furniture. He knows he shouldn't be proud of it, but he carves Andrew, his work, on the underside of the table in tiny, tiny letters. Maybe one day, someone will see the letters and know that the table is his work. Writing books by hand. We learned that the years after the fall of Rome are called the Middle Ages, and that in England these years are also known as Dark Ages. Do you remember why we call this time the Dark Ages? Most people in England couldn't read or write, so they didn't write down stories and histories. When Augustine and his companions came to England, they told the Anglo-Saxons about Christianity, but they also taught them how to read and write. They wanted these new Christians to be able to read the Bible. Monks in monasteries also thought that reading and writing were important. After all, they spent a large part of every day reading the Bible and books written by religious men. But back in the Dark Ages, books weren't as easy to make as they are today. Bookmaking was a long, complicated process, and only the monks were skilled enough to make beautiful books. In the Dark Ages, you couldn't just go to a store and buy paper. So the monks began by making a special paper called parchment out of animal skin. They put cow or sheep skins in running water, such as a stream or river, for several days. Then they soaked it again in a barrel filled with water and lime, a chemical that loosened the hair on the skin, for several days more. Finally, they would stretch out the skin, scrape the hair off with a knife, and then attach it to a frame so that it could dry. But that wasn't all. Once the skin was dried, the monks would take it off the frame, wet it again, and rub it with a rough stone. One medieval book tells us that the best way to wet the skin was to take a mouthful of beer and then spit the beer all over the skin. When the skin had been dried all over again, it was time to make the ink by mixing soot with water and the sap of trees. The monk had to prepare quill pens by pulling feathers out of a goose or swan's wing, soaking the feathers in water and scraping the tips. Then the parchment had to be cut into rectangles, folded over to make pages, and stitched together to make booklets. Finally, it was time to write out the words. All books were written out by hand. The monks worked all day in special rooms called scriptoriums. They made copies of the Bible and other important books by copying them out one letter at a time. Each letter was carefully written in the monks' best handwriting. The books copied by the monks weren't just black letters on white pages. The monks decorated the pages of their books with beautiful colors. They made paints by mixing their colors with egg whites, often real gold and silver, beaten into sheets so thin they could float on the air, were attached to the page as part of the picture. Sometimes a picture took up an entire page. Sometimes it was painted just in the margin or at the top of a page. And sometimes just the first letter on a page was painted and leafed with gold. Writing out long books by hand was hard, slow work. An expert monk might copy out 2 or 3 books in a year, working 8 hours every day. So there weren't very many books in the Middle Ages, and books were valuable. After all, they took months of labor. Often books were chained onto library shelves so that people could only read them standing up, and you certainly couldn't check them out. Monks weren't supposed to talk in the scriptorium. They were supposed to pay close attention to what they were doing. But monks got bored. We can still read some of the books written by hand in the Middle Ages, and we can see that sometimes monks wrote messages to each other and even drew silly pictures in the margins of their books. "I'm cold," one monk wrote. "I wish we had a bigger fire, but Brother John won't let us." Another monk wrote, "I wish I were finished. I have to go to the bathroom." And a third monk drew a little mouse on the edge of his book and wrote, "Curse that mouse." Maybe the mouse had stolen some of his dinner.